It's the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 171. I am your host, Adam Mangum. First up, Brandon Gurney of the Deseret News. We talk about football recruiting and the 2015 class. Who are the studs? Who are the immediate impact players? And what might we expect from this class going forward? Then we also talk about the quarterback depth problem that BYU may have in 2015 behind Taysom Hill. Matt and I then chat about the college football championship, the NFL playoffs, Davies, Jemmer, Bronco, and LSU. And we also talk about the hoops team and what we think it might take for them to make the tournament. This is the Rise and Shout podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @BYU_RiseShout. Email me, Adam@LoyalCougars, and listen to me and Matt and Brandon right now. Welcoming back to the Rise and Shout podcast, Brandon Gurney from the Deseret News. Brandon, welcome back to the podcast.
Always good to be on.
So we always have you on about this time of year for the last, I think this is our fourth or fifth time we've had you on about this time of the year, and to talk recruiting and to talk about who the Cougars might and will likely be getting coming up here with signing day not too far away. So let's start out with kind of the big questions, if you will, or at least from a fan's perspective of this class. Who are the impact players that are committed and you think are very, very likely to keep their commitment to the Cougars, and what can we expect as far as timing for those fellows?
Well, I think the guy that's they're probably looking at to make the biggest impact is the latest recruit that. I'm probably going to butcher his name, Taki Nako, kid from Snow, the safety. I'll just call him the safety from Snow. But he addresses a specific concern, and it's a big concern. As you look at safety depth for next season, it's kind of scarce.
Yeah.
You need to bone up on some bodies there, and he addresses that need directly. Not a heralded recruit, which is kind of typical for this class and for many of Bronco Mendenhall's classes, but he's considered Snell's best defensive player, and the guy who's aggressive. He seems like a Bronco-type safety, and yeah, he's a guy. You kind of wish he was a mid-year guy, but just being a JC guy, maybe he can come in and pick up that slack right away, because they're going to need safety help. There's not a lot of proven talent there outside of Kai Nakua, and so he should get ample opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Of the high school kids, who are the one or two that you think 6 years from now, when we factor in missions and such, we look mm-hmm. back and say they made the biggest impact on this class?
Well, the marquee name, as far as I'm concerned, for this class is Kiefer Longson, the offensive lineman. He was very high profile, a guy that had numerous Pac-12 offers, and kind of surprised a lot that he committed to BYU. Until you look at his Twitter handle, Stormin' Mormon 74. And he exemplifies just the strength of BYU football. A lot of people say, oh, he just committed because he's Mormon, he loves the church. It's like, well, yeah, so? That's a strength. That's a strength that BYU is always going to have, where they can go into Pac-12 country and get a kid out of state, where BYU is really the only program he dreamed of playing at. BYU still has that. To which degree is debatable, but I think it's picked up a bit since they went independent. They become more on the national stage, and then probably been diminished just because of a bad season last year, you could argue, but it's really hard to say. But I think Kiefer Longson really exemplifies the strength of BYU, and getting a big offensive line recruit, I think, is very important for this program, which hasn't really put offensive linemen in the NFL. Scott Young was the last one drafted. I don't know if many fans even remember him.
Yeah, but it's been a long time.
It should be a position of strength for BYU. And I think Coach 2J is going to get that unit humming, and I think it's going to start churning out NFL talent sooner rather than later, and it's very important to land guys like Kiefer Longson. So a very good commitment for BYU. I'm still very high on Dion Lake, a four-star guy that BYU got to commit very early, defensive back from Northridge, and he's I think he's legit. I think he's a guy that you could see make an impact almost immediately on the team, just given the scarcity of capable bodies BYU typically has in the defensive backfield, coupled with his own ability. I think he's a guy that could make a strong impact. Not a mission guy. He's a guy that's going to play four straight years, so we'll see. There's still a lot of mission first guys. Bronco came out and kind of said pretty definitively he preferred guys to play a year and then leave for a mission. But with the scholarship count being what it is, and it's very low again this year, this is the back end of two very thin years as far as available offers. But I think a lot of guys, that's the only way they'd get offered is if they serve the mission first. I believe there's at least eight in this class that are going to be leaving straight for missions, which might end up being almost half the class when it's all said and done. So it's BYU football, and that's what it is. We got this guy. Okay, 5 years, maybe he'll start contributing.
We'll see him. We'll see him in 2016 or 2017. Or 2018 now. Gosh, time's getting away from me. So let's talk about the quarterback position a little bit. BYU found themselves, of course, this year in need of turning to the backup after Taysom Hill's injury. And Christian Stewart came in and actually did an admirable job, better than, quite honestly, I thought he was going to do. And, after a rough start against Utah State, played pretty well the rest of the year. I think fans are now worried about next season and beyond as far as Taysom Hill's health and just having more than one really good quarterback in the group. Is this class going to bring in some quarterback talent that fills the pipeline, or do you think the prospect of Tanner Mangum sitting out there is maybe more than some of these guys want to go up against?
I really believe that BYU needs to bring in another junior college quarterback, but coaches in interviews have said they're done. They're basically done with quarterback recruiting. Outside of Trent Hosek, who's basically said he's not going to come to BYU, maybe they'll extend another offer to a junior college quarterback. The problem there is, if you're looking at the junior college ranks, there's no one. I shouldn't say no one. There's not many junior college players that go to sign on a school to be a backup. You look at them to be immediate impact players. I think that's particularly so for someone who plays a quarterback. I mean, Christian Stewart was very unique in that regard, in that he was a local kid. And you look at local kids who might fill that bill. You look at Alex Caressa, from a guy that used to be in the program that was really good for Snow last year, but BYU had, for whatever reason, there hasn't been an offer extended. But BYU could be in a scary position. You look at Taysom Hill, who's had his last two seasons finished by injury. That seems to be the rule. Hopefully he can make it through unscathed. But you're looking at a situation where you're going to be relying on Bo Hodge, who's a true freshman, who will be a true freshman, I should say. Tanner Mangum, who's going to be fresh off admission. Just a bunch of first-year guys, coupled with some guys last year that were in the program that weren't even good enough to fill the third-string quarterback spot.
Right.
So it's a little dicey, to say the least. A little dicey.
Yeah.
And maybe they can sneak by, but it could be something you look back at. And BYU really hasn't done a good job recruiting and maintaining good quarterback talent and bringing it up through the system. It really hasn't. Ever since they sold the farm and just kind of put recruiting on hold for almost 2 years to accommodate Jake Heaps. And I just feel they're catching up. The problem is with mission guys, Tanner Mangum was already supposed to be back from his mission at this time. He was supposed to have a full year and back off his mission, and he'd be ready to go. But you can never determine when kids are going, exactly when they're going to serve missions. You can with some of them, but some of them delay for whatever reason, and that really makes a mess out of things. So, yeah, the BYU quarterback situation is not good. It's not good, and they need some quarterbacks in there. They need to develop that talent because it looks to be very dicey. I don't know. Maybe Bo Hodge can come in and just be the most incredible thing ever, but can you bank on that? And in my opinion, they need a junior college quarterback, and I don't know who that guy is, but I think that could end up being the big glaring weakness of this class.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I've got to assume at this point, if Hill goes down, it's Hodge or Mangum that is the that comes in. I don't think anybody else that's in the pipeline is likely to play for this team next year. But I know that, of course,
Maybe Mangum, that's the name, right? Mangum.
That's right. He's got a good last name, if nothing else.
He was extremely good pre-mission, extremely good, but just post-mission, a year removed, it's really, really hard to depend on that.
Oh yeah, so. Oh yeah, it's really hard to depend on that. So let's shift gears a little bit and talk also about from the running back position. Obviously, Jamal Williams went down with injury as well in the injury-bitten season. You've got some of these guys coming back, and Williams hopefully healthy as well. Last year, I kind of felt like if Williams went down, we were in rough shape as far as the halfback position goes. It seemed like that came to fruition as the running game kind of stalled with Hill and Williams out. Do you think we have a similar depth problem at running back, or are you more comfortable with the guys that are coming back and the guys that we might be recruiting?
I think running back's okay. I don't think that's a major area of concern. I mean, if Jamal Williams stays healthy, there's no concern. But I think Algie Brown's a budding star. I'm very high on Algie Brown. Yeah. I think we just saw a glimpse of what he's capable of last season. I think he's going to be very good by the time he's done. Then you got Squally Canada coming in. Great name. I love that
name. Fantastic name.
and he's drawn some comparisons to Jamal Williams. I don't know. His film looked good. But again, we'll see. And then Riley Burt, a kid from other in the Logan, Box Elder is where he's from. Originally, they thought he was going to be a defensive back, but they've been telling the kid that he's going to be running back. And he's a very good athlete, very good athlete. So yeah, I think you look at this recruiting class, and I think running back's not really a position that you pinpoint to worry about. I think they're fine there.
Good. Well, as usual, Brandon, we appreciate your insight, and we'll encourage everybody to go read your coverage of recruiting in the Cougars at Deseret News, and we'll have you on, as we usually do, sometime after signing day to talk about anything that might have been a surprise. But this doesn't feel like a big surprise year, does it?
Well, there's a few names out there that could surprise. I think BYU might still be in the hunt for James Ampey. It's a kid that hates talking about recruiting more than anyone I've ever covered, but that they might be able to swing him. And then probably the two most likely guys still out there would be Gabe Reed and Brent Covey, both from Tempview. I think BYU still got a good chance for both those guys. And then Mufi Hunt for Taylorsville is another guy you look at, a guy that could come to BYU. He's still in touch with BYU coaches, likes the program. But there's a few. There might be some letter of intent day drama.
Yeah,
for sure. So
that's that always makes it more a little more fun to watch, I guess, on those days. So, well, thanks, Brandon, for coming on, and we'll have you on again sometime soon.
Thank you.
So, Matt, Rise and Shout podcast. We've done 170 episodes. This is number 171. Is that special?
Of course it is. Every episode is special to me.
Dang straight.
Yeah.
Can you say that without swearing? Dang straight. Does that even work?
No, it doesn't work. Not even a little bit.
Not even a little bit.
No.
So, Matt, I wanted to tell you my favorite part of the college football championship last night.
Wow. Okay.
My favorite part. The trailer for Avengers Age of Ultron.
Yep, I probably could have predicted that. Boom. I thought about it.
Mine exploded.
Oh my gosh.
I am so excited. I was dancing around like a 8-year-old girl, and I know what that looks like because I have one.
Well, you normally dance. When you dance, it looks like an 8-year-old girl.
That is factually correct. So, but in all seriousness, on a scale of 1 to awesome, how was that game last night?
Oh, it definitely on the awesome end of the scale.
Yeah, yeah.
Unbelievable.
I watched pregame, Matt. I never watch pregame. I watched the pregame.
You know, when I got home from work last night,
yes,
my son had been sitting watching ESPN, I think, all afternoon. He was full of all sorts of stats and knowledge. It was pretty hilarious.
And you know what one of the best parts of ESPN's coverage was? And I tweeted this out last night.
What's that?
No Mark May.
Well, he was on one of the feeds. Yeah. You could go find him if you wanted him.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure that feed was really popular. Right up there with the feed where you get to listen to the sound of a root canal. Actually, I'd rather do that. I'd rather really? Do that. So let me...
Somebody's got to like Mark May.
Yeah, some executive at ESPN. I mean, when I mock him on Twitter, no one... Like, sometimes if I poke at some other announcers, there's always someone that defends them, right? Oh, I kind of like them. Nobody ever says that about Mark May. I've never once when I've mocked him. And I mock him almost every weekend. And usually the tweet goes something like this. Thank you, ESPN. You got me off your halftime show very fast when I saw who was hosting. Anyway, so Matt, on a scale of one to awesome, Cardale Jones in his third start winning a national championship.
Awesome.
I mean, wow. I mean, the announcer said it all last night. I mean, we lose our quarterback and then we get destroyed by Utah State. They lose two quarterbacks and they win a national championship.
So if you're him, do you just go to the NFL now? I mean, what do you have left to do?
Well, here's the thing. So I was reading Todd McShay of ESPN on that very topic, right? And here's the problem for him. The problem is you have two Heisman Trophy candidate quarterbacks already on the roster.
Yeah.
So you go back, you are now a junior. You've got Braxton Miller, and why can't I think of the other kid's name that was the quarterback?
JT Barrett.
You got those two guys. Who starts?
Well, they're saying Miller is looking to transfer. And there are schools courting him, and he can go without, and he can play right away.
But Urban Meyer says Miller's staying put. So I don't know. Is that Urban Meyer doing the public shaming of Braxton Miller to keep him in the program? I don't know. If you're Urban Meyer, don't you let the kid go? Like, you've got JT Barrett and Cardale Jones. Like, but of course, the flip side of that is he does not want to face Braxton Miller in the playoff next year, right?
Right.
If he transfers to, and of course, they'd probably ask him not to do it within the Big Ten. But,
yeah, but that's not going to matter when you get to the college football playoff.
No. No, it will not. Playoffs?
Playoffs? I think the two teams that I've heard in the mix there are Texas and Florida State.
I can tell you right now that if he ended up going to Florida State and Ohio State met in the college football play of next year, the internet would explode. As would
Twitter Twitter would burn down.
Kirk Herbstreit's head would explode.
I like Kirk Herbstreit.
I do. I like him too. I think
I jumped right to his defense. I wouldn't do that for Mark May.
You would not. Him and Chris Fowler are a great team. I know some people were upset that Musburger lost the top spot with ESPN ABC. I actually prefer Fowler. He may be my favorite play-by-play guy.
Fowler's great.
In any sport. I love him. I know you're not a tennis guy, but I love him as a tennis commentator as well.
You can love a tennis commentator?
Sure you can. Tennis is great. Just because you don't like it, that just says more about you than it says about tennis. No,
nobody announces a round of golf like this guy.
Okay, whoa, whoa, whoa. I am not talking about golf. I'm talking about tennis, brother. That's
oh, right, different. right. Sorry, I got confused.
Yeah, you're easily confused. So anyway, back to the college football playoff. It was a great game. Ohio State was much better than all of this thought they were, but we should have known better when they destroy a good Wisconsin team and handily beat Alabama. We should have known.
Right. I mean, everybody should have seen that this was a very distinct possibility.
But you just figured that Cardale Jones is going to turn into a pumpkin. Which he did, and it didn't matter.
Mariota, I mean, come on.
All I could say is that Ezekiel Elliott, beast mode.
Oh my gosh,
beast mode last night. That was quite remarkable. And Jones, he did make a couple of mistakes, but you know, he actually looked very good. And when he took on the nose tackle for Oregon, that's when I turned to my wife, who was, of course, asleep. And I said to no one, basically, I should have just texted you this, game's over. When your quarterback runs over the other team's nose tackle, you're done.
Yeah, this is not going to go well for you.
Yeah, I mean, he had a great game. So Matt, you and I both follow the same professional football team, the New England Patriots.
Yes, sir.
And by the way, they're in the AFC Championship against the Colts.
Shocker. I know.
I have 1 o'clock church, so there are a couple things working in my favor, though. I will DVR the game.
You gotta get out of that.
I will DVR the game. Get out of 1 o'clock church. Yeah, I wish. I now have the best calling for not hearing about sports. I'm in the primary. There's 0% chance, and there aren't many guys in the primary in our ward. I'm in the primary, and no one's going to be talking to me about the Patriots game and giving live updates. So I have a chance of making it home with no knowledge of the game.
You might want to just turn your phone off.
Oh, there's a 100% chance that my phone will be turned off.
What, you're worried that somebody, I don't know, like me, might text you stuff just to mess with your head?
I'm not worried about you, because you actually would never do that, because you know that it would come back on you tenfold.
Well, but you do know that I would text you absurd things.
Yes, you would say the same thing you text every time, which is, Bane just blew up the stadium.
Yep.
Ha ha ha, funny joke the first time. The 10th time, Matt, it's not as funny.
I'm still, you know what? I'm going to send you a text right now that says that.
Yeah.
Right now. I'm going to text you right now. I hope you have your ringer on and it's close to your microphone.
And it's close to the microphone. We'll see if you actually can live up to your threats. Anyway, any surprises for you in the NFL playoffs? I mean, it's kind of, I guess the Colts are a little bit of a surprise. We have a problem. Did you hear that?
That was your ringtone, huh?
Yeah, that's my ringtone for you. Houston, you have a problem. Bane just walked into the stadium, question mark. So the Colts, I guess, are a little bit of a surprise, but I wouldn't say, really, Matt, this is going to continue? Now insulting Tex?
I don't know what you're talking
about. You're better than that. So the Colts are a little bit of a surprise, but Packers, Seahawks, kind of saw that one coming on the other side. Obviously, you and I are rooting for the Patriots to make it to the Super Bowl and win it. And most of our listeners would like to punch us in the face right now. But without your Patriots goggles on, is this the Seahawks year again? They look really good.
They look very good.
Of course, we say this and they'll probably get beat by 14 by Aaron Rodgers. But
I'll tell you what, if Urban Meyer were coaching the Packers, I'd probably pick the Packers.
Holy cow. That was the coaching clinic, man. Coaching clinic. Here's the thing with Oregon. They did not adjust defensively, right? And after that first drive, the Ohio State coaching staff, they had a plan on offense. They adjusted their plan on defense. And the coaching, Oregon staff, all due respect to them, and I think they're a great staff, got out-coached. Flat out-coached. In that game. So, Matt, back to the NFL. Do you think it's Seahawks, Patriots? Is this just on collision course? Pete Carroll, the former Patriots coach against the great Bill Belichick?
I'd be shocked to see anything other than that. And I think the way we've seen these playoffs pan out, with the exception of a couple of performance issues, right? I would have expected Peyton Manning to do a little bit better, but maybe
he was hurt.
You know, it turns out he was hurt, and you know, and when you look at history, maybe none of us should have been shocked with his performance. But I don't know that I would have seen them winning that game anyway.
Right, right. Let me ask you a related question. John Fox and his entire staff are fired. Is that insane? I mean, they've won 12 games 3 years in a row. They made the Super Bowl last season, and you fire the entire coaching staff.
I think that's silly.
I think it's absurd, and I hope they go backwards. No disrespect, John Elway, but You guys deserve to go backwards for making that kind of call. You brought Fox in, you brought that staff in, and they did what they were supposed to do, which is win you a lot of games and get you to the Super Bowl. The fact that they got destroyed in the Super Bowl, you know, that's how it rolls sometimes.
Well, but the other thing, too, is this, is that Elway put a whole game plan together to get the Broncos into the Super Bowl that included Peyton Manning.
Yes.
And the whole structure was kind of built around that.
Yes.
And when you look at Peyton Manning now, you know, it didn't work out quite, you know, last year. It clearly didn't work out this year. You know, Manning now he's got this quadriceps injury, which you can recover from a quad tear. You know, sure. but he's played a lot of seasons. You know, there's some questions about how much football he has left in him. So if you're Elway, are you just blowing the whole thing up and starting over again and moving on to whatever your next plan is to get back to the Super Bowl? Is that what he's doing?
It all hinges on Manning coming back, right? And maybe you don't even want Manning back. Maybe if Manning comes back, you do blow it up and you want Manning and let him walk. But I'll tell you what, and I tweeted this out because there's a lot of anti-Peyton Manning tweets this weekend. Outside of about four or five teams, everybody else would want him. Right? If you're the right. Bears, are you going to keep Jay Cutler or would you upgrade to Peyton Manning, even if you know he might not have a lot left in the tank? Dolphins, Bills. I mean, I could keep listing teams. Unless you're the Patriots, Seahawks, Saints, Packers, there's probably a couple teams I'm missing here. Everybody would want him. Right? And Kaepernick's not... isn't safe anymore. The coach that brought him in and replaced Alex Smith is gone. I'm just saying. I mean, if Peyton Manning
partially because of that very decision,
it's funny. At the time, I thought it was genius, and it doesn't look as genius now. So, Matt, let's get back to BYU or back. We've never really gotten there, but let's do Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news.
So a couple weeks ago, we were discussing Brandon Davies and maybe a surgence, not a resurgence, but a surgence. Is that a word?
Sure. If resurgence is a word, it's like you can be overwhelmed and underwhelmed, but can you ever just be whelmed?
Maybe. Maybe. You
maybe.
Can. I'm whelmed right now. Brandon Davies is not in the NBA anymore and signed with a team in France. Reaction.
You know, it'd be great to have seen him get picked up and stay, but you know, I think when you look at the way the contracts shake out in the NBA, you know that there were going to be some cuts at about that time. You know, and it didn't pan out for him. You know, hopefully what this creates for him is an opportunity to go over, play in France a little bit, and try and find an opportunity back in the NBA. I do believe, based on, you know, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, but based on his performance, I do believe that he's got a spot somewhere. Somewhere in the NBA, just not in 2015.
Yep, agree with you there. Jimmer also in the news a little bit because Austin Rivers gets traded to Boston, opens up some playing time for Jimmer. We've played this game before. I'm not holding my breath for Jimmer playing 20 minutes a game from here on out. What is your reaction?
You know, the other night I was watching the New Orleans Pelicans and Boston Celtics game.
Yes.
Was this last night while I was before the national championship game?
I don't know.
I think I was watching this while I was running. But one of the things that the announcers talked about when Jimmer came into the game was they said, well, you know, this Jimmer Fredette. I mean, the guy was shot lights out in college, but his scoring average in the NBA has gone down every year.
Yes, it has. As has his minutes.
Right. And I think that there's some relationship there.
Yes, certainly.
I'm not necessarily one is not necessarily cause and effect or something, but the two things are related. I was very optimistic. I remember talking about this when Jimmer went to Chicago.
Yes, you were.
This is a place where he's finally going to get a chance, a system that feels like they can use him.
And they didn't.
And they did not. And so I you know, it's kind of like, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
You're on like your third or fourth time getting fooled, but point well taken, sir. And I'm with you. I'm not holding my breath, though I, of course, hope it works out for him, and I still believe within the deepest part of my heart, Matt.
Wow, that he could that's be pretty deep.
Not really. Very shallow guy, actually. But I think Jimmer can produce. Also in the news, Bronco is taking over the defense in 2015.
Yes!
Not really a shock, right?
No.
Were you shocked at all?
I would have been shocked had anything other than this happened.
Yes, yes. I didn't think Howell would get fired. You kind of thought Howell would get fired. I didn't think he'd get fired. I just thought he would get maybe demoted a little bit. The problem is, you know, historically BYU has developed their own coordinators, right? We have not gone out and hired coordinators. That's not totally true, but it is mostly true for the entire, you know, modern history of BYU football. Mm-hmm. And I think because of the way we pay the coaches and things, we are not ever going to go out there and hire, you know, the hot defensive coach, du jour.
Right.
We're likely to hire guys that are much earlier on in their careers, like a Nick Cowell, you know, and give a chance to a guy like Brandon Doman. But then, you know, the problem with all that is, I think Bronco Mendenhall is one of the best defensive coaches in the country. And when yeah. you've got that on your staff, he's just got to call the plays, right? He's got to run the defense, even if he's head coach.
Well, and I think you've kind of nailed it on the head right there. There's basically two constraints that you're dealing with here. And there's, you know, one of them is you have to have a defensive coordinator who could do a better job than Bronco Mendenhall, head coach / defensive coordinator.
Yes.
And that's going to be difficult to find because he's so good.
Yes, and he's shown he can do both in the past.
And then the second piece is, you know, a pipeline of assistant coaching talent coming into Provo. And there's really not such a thing.
Not as of now. And I'm with you, man. It was the right decision, and it gives me greater hope for the 2015 season. Let's jump forward to 2017, Matt. Do you plan that far ahead? Because if you do, which I think you do, you and I are likely to be in the same location for the start of the football season in 2017. And where
are you coming along?
Where is that location, my friend?
Houston, Texas.
Houston, Texas, to watch BYU play LSU. Now, remember all the haters, all of the skeptics. A few months ago, when the ACC and SEC said, you got to schedule these Power 5 teams, and, oh, by the way, BYU's not included. And Tom Holmoe said at the time, don't worry about it. We have things in the works with schools from those conferences. He has since come and delivered on that promise, including a game against LSU and Missouri, two SEC teams, which have materialized since that happened. Matt, is this the... I mean, 2017, we don't know a whole lot about what that schedule will look like yet. There's, you know, some contracted games there. But that's the game in 2017, right?
Oh, yeah.
No matter what else is on the schedule... unless we're playing like Ohio State in the horseshoe, that's the game you're going to go to if you pick one as a fan, right?
Yeah, that's if you're going to travel to an away game, that's the one you want.
Yep. It was exciting. I thought it was a joke when I saw it on Twitter, honestly. When people,
you know, I had missed it. I'd been busy that day. I hadn't been on Twitter much and hadn't really seen any headlines of any sort. And one of our brothers texted me and said, hey, are you pretty excited about this opener in 2017? I said, I'm not really sure what you're talking
say
about.
Say what?
And he's like, I can't believe that you don't already know this. I'm the one that's breaking this news to you. But there I was very, very excited. I'd go buy my tickets right now if they would sell them to
me. If they would sell them, I would be right there with you because there's about a 0% chance I miss that game. Is that a double negative? I should just say there's a 100% chance I'm going. That would be appropriate way to do it.
Let me know if you need a place to stay.
Okay.
I'm sure I could find somebody who'd be willing to take you in.
About a 0% chance of me staying with you.
Good. I'm glad we're on the same page.
Good. We're agreeing here. So, Matt, let's switch to hoops for a moment. You and I, last week, were basically predicting that BYU would lose one more conference game. Though I said two, though I didn't think it would be Pepperdine and Provo. And you said none. And, you know, they had an RPI around 40, maybe high 30s, depending on the site you looked at. Now their RPI has dropped to around 50. Tough loss against Pepperdine. We've spent a lot of time over the last few weeks talking about the value of Kyle Collinsworth. He's out with the flu, not out completely, but greatly diminished, and plays... he still played 25 minutes, but man, he was not himself. 1 from 8 from the floor, only 3 rebounds and 2 assists. I don't know if we have that definitive answer to whether Kyle Collinsworth or Tyler Hawes is more valuable to the team, but I do think we have one answer. Kyle Collinsworth goes down, we're host.
Yeah.
Right? And that's probably true if Hawes goes down or Winder. The depth is not such that there's somebody that's going to pop in and do that, right?
Unfortunately, that's true.
And what I mean, Collinsworth, the triple-double machine, so they bounce back on Saturday night, which they had to do, and beat Loyola Marymount, and he's back doing Kyle Collinsworth things, 13 points, 8 assists, and 10 rebounds, 2 assists away from another triple-double. So, Matt, we're going to do something a new segment that I just created today in my brain. Are you ready?
You just created it today in your brain.
That's right. That's right. That's where I create the big stuff for this podcast, is in my brain. So, Matt, temperature check. Tournament temperature check. All right? So, you have a couple of ratings. Red hot means they are a gimme for the tournament. Kind of hot means, yeah, but, you know, there's a few losses that could derail them. Lukewarm means they're a bubble team. Little cold means they're probably one of those first two teams out. And then dead cold is NIT or maybe whatever that other one is called. What is it called? The CIT?
CSA,
I don't know what it's called. So, temperature check, Matt. What do you got?
It's cold out there. It is cold out there.
What?
Matt, I think up till this point, up until this last loss.
You are so fickle. You are like a
presidential
candidate.
We were already saying they were
flopping.
A bubble team. One of those, and they'd be looking at a really high seed and maybe a play-in game.
That was not last week. We were saying they were in last week. You are like a politician.
We were saying they were in. I don't think we ever said they were looking at a higher seed than 10.
No. We did not say that.
Okay. So that's what I'm saying. They were in, but I mean 10, 12 seed.
Yes.
I think that's a fair characterization of the conversation.
Last week, yes. But not play-in game. I did not think they'd be in a play-in game.
A lot's happened since then.
Well, one game has happened since then. Two games.
And one game that I think is really going to hurt on the resume.
Yes, it will hurt.
I think they're a bubble team. You know, because I think part of what we look at here is, so I'm going to go with the rating of a little cold here. Not dead cold, but a little cold.
I think
they're going to have to win at least one, if not two games against Gonzaga, if they want to get in. That prospect makes me nervous.
I don't think, no, if they beat Gonzaga, they're in, as long as they don't lose another game.
Mm.
I think they're in.
You totally just jinxed it.
I don't believe in jinxing.
Apparently not, because you just
Stanford,
did it.
That win against Stanford, win against UMass, which isn't a great RPI, but it is a quality program. And I think, you know, St. Mary's, if you beat St. Mary's twice, they're going to be an okay program. You know, a lot of commentators think the WCC is a 3-bid league again. And if that's true, we're in. right? But here's the thing.
Yeah, but
if we lose one more in-conference game to a team not called Gonzaga, we're host. I think then we become not the dead cold, because I think a lot of people thought last year we were pretty close to dead cold, and then we didn't even, you know, and we got in, right? So I wouldn't say dead cold, but man, your chances, their margin for error has diminished a lot.
Yeah.
Has diminished a lot. So that Gonzaga game to end the regular conference season in Spokane becomes something important. But of course, the big thing to all this is none of this matters if you run the table in Vegas. Right? You
right,
could lose three more conference games, but then you're waiting, you're sitting there with the prospect of you have to win the tournament.
And what I worry about is that what we've learned about this team is that they are not prepared to run the table in the tournament.
Oh, I don't think we've learned that at all. Look at that run with San Francisco, Santa Clara, and Portland, where they just destroyed three teams, three games in a row. If this team gets hot, I think they could do that, and if they're healthy. But, man, if Collinsworth or Haas goes down, the NIT starts looking like a reach.
Right. They need to. They would at that point. They'd have to go find their Cardale Jones.
Yeah, I don't see one on the roster.
He's not walking through that door.
Cardale is not walking through that door. Plus, I don't know if he's any good at basketball.
I bet you he is.
I bet you he's like a power forward. You know. Anyway, so the temperature check is not great for us right now, for either of us, really. You're a little bit more pessimistic than me, as is usual. But neither of us, neither of us are sitting there going. And I have a beef with you. I have a beef with you. You ready for this?
We're gonna I already know where this is going.
We're going to air some dirty laundry on here, Matt. So I found something out very disturbing about you, and then I tweeted it out to the public, and you took umbrage with that. That I did that, but let's be clear. You were rooting for Ohio State and Urban Meyer last night. Is that incorrect or correct?
Wow.
Yeah, I'm just airing it out. It's good to talk through these things so that you can see how wrong you are.
I think it would be unfair to characterize my enthusiasm.
You're such a politician. Here we go.
For the surrounding the outcome of that game, with the words "rooting for Urban Meyer." I don't know that that would be an accurate description.
But you're a Big Ten homer, so you're rooting for Ohio State.
I am a Big Ten homer. I cannot deny that fact.
Do you have a Big Ten sticker on your car?
I do not have a Big Ten sticker on my car. I don't know that I've ever seen Big Ten stickers anywhere.
I haven't either. The only time I've seen conference stickers on anyone's car, quite frankly, is these SEC fans that root for terrible SEC teams.
Go Vandy!
Then Tennessee is another one right now, where I see Tennessee fans in my Twitter feed or Facebook feed basically talking about how superior the SEC is. And, like, I mean, who... You know, I get it, rooting for a conference in the general sense, right? Like you said, this is good for the Big Ten if Ohio State wins the championship. But in the literal sense, like, you don't sit there every week and go any out-of-conference games, just sit there and, like, come on, Big Ten. Here you go. Here you go, Iowa versus Iowa State.
But I know a guy who does, who's a huge Ohio State fan, and who was actually at the game last night.
And a Big Ten, a massive Big Ten homer, is what you're saying.
Huge. Huge. You know, and well, maybe that's, maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit.
Well, he has
but,
the word.
He did point out to all the SEC fans, he pointed out to all the SEC fans he knows exactly how well the Big Ten did during the bowl season versus how the SEC did.
Well, and here's the thing. Everyone wants to talk about the SEC and their superiority. It's not a matter of conference superiority as much as it is a matter of coaching superiority. Okay? When you're talking about the SEC, who are you really talking about?
Nick Saban.
Nick Saban, Les Miles, and Auburn's had some success lately too, right? You're talking about three programs historically at in Florida when Meyer was there, right? And before.
Mm-hmm.
But Alabama hasn't been good all of my lifetime, right? Tennessee
nope.
was a power in the SEC for a while when they had great coaching and people caught
and
up.
Manning.
And Manning. Though they didn't win a championship until Manning left. That was a dig. That was a dig. I'm sorry, Peyton. I love your commercial.
Kind of unnecessary. You really kick chicken, a man while he's down.
Chicken parm, you taste so good.
Yeah.
So
just wait till the guy's alone sitting on a go-kart eating pizza and go after him.
Yeah, and Papa John won't even return his calls right now. It's very awkward.
You know who's excited about all that is Joe Montana.
Yeah.
More FaceTime for him.
More FaceTime for Joe Montana. Selling Preparation H and painkillers. So here's the thing is it's really about coaches, right? And now that Urban is there and Jim Harbaugh is there in the Big Ten, do you really think 3 years from now we're going to be talking about how superior the SEC is to the Big Ten? No, we're not. I don't think so.
Ohio State and Michigan are going to compete every year.
Yeah, and if they're in the – like, does it really matter who your – I mean, both conferences will have terrible teams, right? Will have just awful teams. And you'll have a team like, you know, Mississippi State and Ole Miss where, you know, where a team comes out of nowhere and is good for a year or two and maybe falls back with the pack. So to me, it's really about coaches as much as it is about the conference. And I'll tell you what, who has SEC speed, or whatever that means, Ohio State. Good golly, like fast, right? Everyone was talking about how fast Oregon was, and Ohio State met them step for step. Very impressive. Highly impressive.
That was just crazy.
So, Matt, what are you going to do now that college football is over and we only have three remaining meaningful professional football games left? Are you about to go into your deep football off-season hibernation?
Yeah, it's kind of like it's a great time of year because there's so much good football on right now. Like, when it's on, it's really good.
Yeah, yeah.
But
then it's over.
But then it's going to be gone.
It's going to be gone. Will you be watching CFL or Arena League?
I'll watch some CFL. I'll probably watch some Arena League. I'll watch old games.
Watch old
replay games on a variety of networks.
But hey, catchers and pitchers report soon enough.
Yes.
So will you and I, as these baseball slash football fans, it's a dark time for the next few weeks after the Super Bowl, but we will muddle through it as we always do.
Yeah, but baseball coming back when it does really helps.
Oh yes, it lifts the spirits, Matt. Makes us.
Yeah, and I want to get into the NBA. I do, but I can't yet.
Yeah,
I don't know what it is.
I'm more into it this season than I have been in the last few, despite the fact that the Celtics are not any good and not going to really factor in to the playoff discussion, really. To me, I really enjoy watching LeBron, and I enjoy watching Kevin Durant. And it's weird now. I used to be a team league guy, and now I'm a player guy. Like, I want to see Durant play, I guess, you know, his team, and I want to see LeBron play, you know, I want to see Steph Curry play, right? But I don't really like, I'm not going to sit down, like, with football, I would sit down and watch a mediocre Thursday night professional matchup, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to sit down on a Wednesday night and watch a mediocre NBA matchup on ESPN or TNT or whatever. I'm just not going to. Not anymore. Not anymore. Well, Matt, any parting words for the loyal podcast listeners?
We're just now we enter the time of year where all there is to talk about are rumors and, you know, what's going to happen in the fall and the let the prognosticating begin.
Yes, yes, you and I will most undoubtedly predict the final record for the season sometime between 1 and a billion times between now and next September.
Yeah, so what's the over under on how many times we'll predict, we'll run through the 2015 schedule and predict wins and losses?
16.5.
I'm taking the over.
I take the under, but just slightly. because I can control that as the moderator. All right, Matt. Well, any parting words for the loyal listeners?
That's all I've got.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for downloading and listening. We are a top 100 college and high school football, college and high school sports podcast, by the way. Top 100.
That's what I'm talking about.
But thanks for downloading and listening. Follow us on Twitter at BYU _ right. Shout to join the conversation about BYU sports and other ridiculousness. And of course, we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars. Thought it was dead and buried. Then it woke you up last night.